Actually, we're up to Pasuk 15. The last Pasuk we learned last week was the girl who's going to become pregnant and give birth to a child, and his name will be called Emmanuel. And we went through the Mefarshim, of course, that make it quite clear that we are not at all talking about somebody who's going to be born 600 years later. That happens to be the point that is certainly most telling in terms of the context in which this is written. Here we are talking about Ahaz, the king of Yehuda, who is being attacked by Ritzin, king of Aram, Pekach ben Remayahu, king of Yisrael. So you're going to go tell me that the Pasuk is talking about a virgin who is going to give birth to a child whose name will be Emmanuel, and then so you're telling Ahaz, who is under siege, don't worry, help is on the way 600 years down the line. Of course, that doesn't make any sense at all. And therefore, the Pasuk, according to most Mefarshim, is talking about the fact that the prophet's wife is going to give birth to a child, and we're going to see proof of this a little while later on. We're also going to see that some of the Mefarshim say that this child who's going to be born is going to be Chizkiyahu, king of Yehuda. But now let's talk about the child. What does the child signify? So Pasuk 15 says the following: Chema udvash yochel, butter and honey he will eat. Lidato, of his own intellect, a personal decision. Mo'oz bara, he is going to reject evil. Uvachor batov, and he's going to choose good. Ki beterem yeda hanar. Now, what it means, of course, is that this means that there a period of plenty is going to come upon Eretz Israel. You sort of have in his eating butter and honey, you hear, of course, Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, a land flowing with milk and honey. For that matter, there's so much milk, we will see, that they have to turn the milk into butter. So the child's diet represents a period of great prosperity that's going to come to Eretz Yisrael, which is certainly not the situation right now. Right now, the situation is one of war. They are on the threshold of war. For that matter, Yerushalayim seems like it is going to fall into the hands of Pekach ben Remaliahu, king of Yisrael, and Ritzin Melech Aram. But now the Navi tells Ahaz, you have nothing to worry about. When this child grows up, his diet is going to be one of great wealth, going to represent great wealth in the land. Ki beterem posik tetzayin, ki beterem yedah anar ma'oz baro b'chor batov. Even before the child is going to have the intelligence to reject evil and choose that which is good, and we're not necessarily talking about good and evil on its highest levels, he'll know that dvash is dvash, honey is honey, and chema is chema. Even before that happens, now, the pasuk seems a little heavy here, but when you read the whole thing, you get the idea exactly what the Navi is saying. Te ozev ha'adama, asher atak katz mipnei shnei milacheha. The country will have been left from these two kings who are causing you so much distress. Atokots means the ones who cause you worry, strain, stress, tension. They're going to be gone. Ritzin, king of Aram, who is now the superpower of the day, is going to be a has-been. Pekach ben Remaliahu, great king of Israel, mighty 10 tribes, will be a nothing. They will have passed from the scene completely. Now, we're going to see later on that means that all of these changes are going to take place in a period of 2 years. He's not telling him, Mehayom Lemachar, that tomorrow it's all going to be over. But there are changes that are in the wind. Remember, the Navi is talking to Ahaz about the new Middle East. And there are going to be dramatic changes in this new Middle East. In this chapter, he's also going to tell us that the great superpower Aram, that seems now to be unbeatable, the mighty, mighty force of the day, is really, you can't see it, but they're in the process of crumbling, and there's going to be a new fella on the block, and this is going to be Ashur. So he's telling Ahaz that tremendous apocalyptic changes are going to take place in the Middle East. Yovi Hashem Alecha Val Ancha Val Beit Avicha Yomim Asher Lo Bo Limiyon Sur Ephraim Me'al Yehuda Et Melech Ashur. Here for the first time we hear that there's a king of what is right now some kind of a backwater province in Mesopotamia. There's going to be a Melech Ashur, king of Assyria, who is now going to be ascendant in this Middle East. There are going to be psukim between here and the end of the chapter that can be understood as messages of great hope to Ahaz, king of Yehuda, and they can also be understood as warnings of suffering that will come upon them. There's something ambivalent about the psukim here. We're also going to have psukim, and I'm really giving you basically what the Mefarshim are saying over here, and that is there are psukim that are going to be talking about rising and falling, and it may very well be talking about Aram and Yisrael. It may also be talking about Ashur, because as Yeshayahu sees the rise of Ashur, he also sees the ultimate destruction of Ashur. And now we're at chapter 7. By 9, chapters 9 and 10, they are going to be devoted to the destruction of Ashur. Empires rise and empires fall. Nations keep coming, nations keep going, passing like shadows, wiped off the earth. Egypt enslaved thee, Babylon crushed thee, Rome led thee captive, homeless thy head. How do you like that? Not bad? Okay. So all of these changes are now taking place, are going to take place, and therefore the Navi says, Yavi Hashem Alecha Val Amcha, God, you, Ahaz, God is going to bring upon you, upon your people, Val Beit Avicha, and upon your father's house, Yomim Asher Lo Bo'u, days the kind of which had never come before. This is the way in which he is telling him that there are going to be tremendous upheavals, dramatic changes. From when? Limbiyom Sur Ephraim Me'al Yehuda. When did Ephraim remove itself from Yehuda? That was when Yerobam ben Nevat broke off from Rehavam, king of Yehuda, and most probably that was the last earth-shattering event that had struck Eretz Yisrael. That's quite an event. I mean, we sort of talk about it as, you know, there's a Melech Yehuda and a Melech Yisrael, but we're talking about a nation torn asunder. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's bad enough over here. We're divided, you know, right and left. Can you imagine? I don't want to think of the unthinkable that there would be two kingdoms here, Mamlechet HaYemin and Mamlechet HaSmol, the kingdom of the right and the kingdom of the left. Or the kingdom of light and the kingdom of darkness. And everybody's going to claim their light and the other one is darkness. That was a shattering event, I'll tell you. There are times when I sit and I think about it. Klal Yisrael torn apart in such a frightening and terrifying way. Which means that when the Navi wants to point to a watershed event that shattered the consciousness of the Jewish people, the one thing that he can point to is the day that Ephraim turned away from Yehuda. The next great event that's going to happen And this is a period of about 200 years between one event and the next. The next great event that's going to happen is going to be Et Melech Ashur, the ascendancy and the rise of Ashur. I think, you know, sometimes maybe because empires don't last in our days as long as they did then. The fact is, of course, that the collapse of the Soviet Union was a was an event in history. I think we did feel it. Certainly Jews must have felt it. But, you know, so much has happened since then. Yesterday's news in this country is what are you talking about? The 7 o'clock news doesn't mean anything anymore. There must be all sorts of stuff happening now at 9 o'clock. You know, news, this is the least boring country in the world. There is no country that generates as much news per day as this country does. So he says here, the next great event is going to be the rise of the king of Ashur. V'hoyo b'yomahu, and it will come to pass on that day. Very beautiful imagery is used by Yeshayahu. It will come to pass on that day, Yishrok Hashem lazvuv, Asher b'kitzei ye'orei Mitzrayim. God is going to whistle. Now, I never learned how to do it. I always envied people, you know, kids who are able to put two fingers in their mouth and, you know, whistle. Yishrok is a whistle. The whistle heard round the world. God is going to whistle to the fly that is at the end of the canals of Egypt, v'latvora shebe'eretz Ashur, and to the bee that is in the land of Ashur. There's so many pshatim over here on what what it refers to. The simplest way to look at it is, and this is certainly is going to happen in the years to come, there's going to be a clash between the two superpowers. There will be two superpowers. As Ashur rises, Mitzrayim is still a power. And they are going to be locked in struggle with one another. And of course, who's always caught in the middle? Between Ashur to the north and Mitzrayim to the south. There you have Eretz Yisrael caught in the middle. Always at the unhappy center of events in the Middle East. So the armies of Egypt are called, God is going to whistle to bring the flies from the canals of Mitzrayim, because it seems at the sources of the Nile there are a lot of flies. Ashur, it seems, for some reason, is a land where there are a lot of bees. You know, the flies and the bees. That's the kind of terminology that's used by Yeshayahu. The flies and the bees represent the mighty armies of Mitzrayim and Ashur. Of course, there's beauty to the fact that they're referred to as flies and bees, which are really nothing more than, they're a problem, but it's nothing serious, because remember, the one who's moving these chess pieces is the Rabbeinu Shalom himself. He is the one who's calling these forces. So as far as he's concerned, they're nothing more than flies and bees. And those forces are going to clash. Upo v'nochu kulam b'nachalei ha'batot, u'b'nikikei ha'slaim, u'b'chol ha'na'atzutzim, u'b'chol ha'na'alolim. Here again is a pasuk that very difficult to know precisely what it means. It may very well be a pasuk that is telling Achaz, Israel is going to be caught in the middle of this struggle, because all of them are going to come, v'nochu, and they will come to rest, the flies and the bees. B'nachalei ha'batot. Nachalei ha'batot, a nachal, of course, is a riverbed. Nachalei ha'batot. Bat also has the meaning of something that's desolate, something like a wadi, where there is no life anymore. And they're going to come, and they're going to come to rest there. U'b'nikikei ha'slaim, and in the cleft of the rocks. In other words, this is the description of the topography of Eretz Yisrael, and the flies and the bees are going to come in over here, representing Mitzrayim and Ashur. And during the course of the coming years, precisely that is going to happen. Remember, Ashur Sancheriv, king of Asher, is the one who is going to send the 10 tribes into exile. He is the one who is going to conquer all of Yehuda. He's going to reach the point where he surrounds Yerushalayim, and of course, outside the gates of Yerushalayim, he is going to be destroyed. Do you want to hear something? Okay. Ubechol ha-na'atzutzim, ubechol ha-na'alolim, na'atzutzim and na'alolim are thorns and thistles. They're going to come and they're going to settle down in Eretz Yisrael. But you know what's going to happen with them at the end? Don't be worried about them. They will cause a great deal of pain to the Jewish people. However, by Yom Ahu, there's going to be the day. That day, Yikarach Hashem betar haschira. Be'evrei nahar, the melech ashur et harosh, v'sar haraglayim, v'gamet hazakan tispeh. God's vengeance that is brought down upon the enemy is described by Yeshayahu as ta'ar haschira. Ta'ar haschira, ta'ar is a razor. Ta'ar haschira is the kind of razor that one rents out with. It means the following. It's a professional razor that's used by a barber. That's right. A professional razor. A professional razor, you can say, is even more than razor sharp. With the tar haschira, God is going to shave those who come from the other side of the river. Who comes from the other side of the river? The king of Ashur. In other words, in a matter of three psukim, Yeshayahu is describing to us the rise of the kingdom of Ashur, and then its ultimate destruction. God is going to destroy it. And the destruction of Ashur is going to be total, complete, because the great barber in heaven, the big barber, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is going to cut the hair of the head, the hair of the feet, and also the beard will be destroyed. And of course, the imagery over here is the hair on the head represents, of course, the leadership of Ashur. The hair of the legs represents the common folk. The gamet hazakan tispeh, that may very well be the intellectuals, the people of great ideas. All of them are going to be destroyed. Yes. I didn't say Chazal, I said the Mefarshim. No, there are others who... You know, Yirmiyahu is already after the days. Asher has already fallen, or is in the process of falling when Yirmiyahu becomes king, becomes Navi. Yirmiyahu is the one who is going to prophesy about the rise of Babel. And not only the rise of Babel, he is also going to be the one who will prophesy, as Yeshayahu does in chapter 45, about Koresh, king of Persia. Koresh, who is going to ultimately destroy Babel. By the way, Yeshayahu has a number of magnificent chapters 13 and 14, about Babel. That's 150 years down the line. On Ashur, I don't know. Amos, Hosea can make it all up. Yeah, Hosea certainly, because Hosea describes the destruction of the 10 tribes. Why do you want to know? It's always similar. It's always similar, but not identical. The Gemara says the following: that many prophets can say prophecy, but they do not prophesy b'signon echad, with one style. Every one had their own style. For example, it's going to become more graphic. Hang on, it's going to become more graphic. But there even going to be something. For example, Ovadia is one chapter. Ovadia describes the destruction of Edom. I think it's Yirmiyahu chapter 48 where he describes the destruction of Edom. And except for a few words difference, it nearly sounds precisely like the prophecy of Ovadia. You know, no two prophets say exactly the same prophecy. There's always some kind of difference. But remember, there may be more than one prophet that's going to talk about Asher. Remember, to whom does Yeshayahu address his words? Huh? And in the broader sense, he's speaking to Yehuda and Yerushalayim. Yeshayahu is not a prophet to the 10 tribes. Somebody's going to have to tell the 10 tribes about what's going to happen to Ashur. Somebody's going to have to tell them that there's a Sancheriv, a king of Ashur, who's going to come and send them into exile. Those are going to be the prophets who speak to Yisrael. And Hoshea is one of those. Amos and Micha, they all said prophecy at the same time. But Yeshayahu speaks to Yehuda and the others speak to Yisrael. So that, but they will use their own images. They use different, the style is different, but the substance of the message is the same. And it will come to pass on that day, the next two psukim are a description of, I would say, shalom in bitachon, peace and security, prosperity. You know, it means that after the fall of Aram, after the fall of Aram, there's going to be a period of tranquility. And how is it described on Yom HaHu on that day? Yechaye ish, a man will live, or he will raise a glad bakar, a calf ushtei tzon and two shefsalach. And there's going to be so much for Hoyo Merov Asos Chalav. Didn't I tell you this before? When it says that the child is going to eat butter. Why? Because Merov Asos Chalav, from so much milk that is being made, Yochal Chem'ah, he's going to eat butter. Ki Chema Udvash Yochel Kol Hanotar Bekerev Aretz. Because butter and honey will be eaten by all those who remain in the midst of the land. After the period of upheaval, after the wars, there will be again a period of Eretz Zavat Cholav Udvash. This is what he's telling Ochaz. Remember, Ochaz is the one who, when Hashem says, ask for a sign from me, he refuses. Because Ochaz is a king who is a Rasha. He doesn't want anything that is going to intensify or deepen the message of God. He rejects it all entirely. Therefore, Yeshayahu is the one who, of his own accord, is the one who tells him exactly what's going to be. You should know. And then when you see that it all happens, you will know precisely who is the architect of Jewish history. V'hoyah b'yomahu. And when it comes to pass on that day, yiyah kol makom, ashiyah sham elev gefen, be'elef kosef, la'shomi ve'la'shayit yihyeh. Now, here, of course, he's going from a description of great plenty to a period of great destruction and devastation. In other words, there will be periods of great prosperity and there will be periods of destruction. And then he says, there will be a day that every place where there were a thousand vines that were worth 1,000 kesef, each one was worth a kikar of kesef. You know what's going to end up with it? La shomir v'la shayit yiyeh. It will be la shomir v'la shayit. And Mefarshim usually explain this as meaning all sorts of thorns and thistles, that the land is going to be desolate. Bachitzim u'bakeshet yavo shama. When you're going to go into a field, you're going to have to go into a field armed with bow and arrow, with arrows and with a bow, because the fields are going to be so overrun with underbrush. Who knows what lurks in those fields? The same field that years earlier had been a source of great blessing now becomes a place that one is simply afraid to go, and you can only go there by chitum or by keshet. By the way, I can't help it. I mean, but we live in contemporary times, and therefore we see the words of the Navi in a contemporary setting. when he talks about places that you were once able to go and walk with ease, and then these same places you cannot go there unless you are armed, can very well be a description of a good part of Eretz Yisrael today, right now. It means a place that was calm and peaceful and tranquil, and you were able to go without batting an eyelash. Now you can only go if you're armed, and you can only go if you're going in a bus that is Mugan Neged Yeri. But I know, that's become part of our terminology. Mugan Neged Yeri, defended, it's protected against bullets and all. There was a time that, you know, you need a Mugan car or a bus was the one that was Mugan Neged Avanim, stones. No, that's not good enough, you understand? We live in our own country right now. We're in many parts of this country. You have to go in bulletproof vehicles. This is exactly what he is describing over here. At one point, it was... And he's talking about brutal animals, cruel animals. That's the next part. Bachitzim u'bakeshet yavo. You can only go there now if you're going with arrows and bow. Kishomi v'shayet tiyeh kol haaretz. The whole earth is going to be overrun and overgrown in such a way that anything can be hiding and lurking over there in those fields and behind those rocks and upon those hills. V'chol hehorim asher b'ma'adir ye'adirun lo tavo shama yir'ad shomi v'shayet v'haya l'mishlach shor u'lemirmas seh. The mountains asher b'ma'adir ye'adirun, I'm afraid to say, one of the areas that's still, when I used to drive there, the area between Yerushalayim going south to Efrat, to Hebron. So there you look at the mountainsides, you know, the way they are terraced. I imagine Pashat Avram Avinu is the one who dug with the hoe, and, you know, the man with the hoe bowed by the weight of centuries. The ones who did this, goes back many, many years. Because on the mountains you couldn't plant the way you would plant down on the fields, so you had to make levels and terrace stepping of the mountains. So there, those areas are not going to become overrun by thorns and thistles, but you know what will happen? There will still be desolation, because the oxen and the sheep are going to destroy everything that lives there. V'chol ha'orim, and all of the mountains, asher b'ma'adir ye'odeirun, that are hoed with the hoe, lo tavo shama, they will not come there, yid'at shamir v'ashayit, the fear of thorns and thistles, but v'hayol mishlach shor ulemir mas tse, people will send their oxen out there, and it will be trampled by sheep. To me, it seems, of course, that most of these psukim are describing destruction, because remember, Ochos is a Hosha, and Ochos has to know that whatever he has done has caused irreparable harm to the Jewish people. A leader who leads people down the path that Ochos did is the one who is assuring that there's going to be terrible, terrible destruction. There will be periods of great prosperity in the middle, because remember, Ochos is going to have a son, Chizkio, and Chizkio is going to be the tzaddik about whom the Gemara says that Bikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to make Chizkio Mashiach. So just as there are the Ochazes and the Chizkiohus, there is the desolation and there is the prosperity. There will be the Bayom Hahu of Eretz Zavas Cholavet Vash, and there's going to be the Bayom Hahu of Shomer Vashayet. We finished another chapter. This is great. Vayomer Hashem Elai, God said to me, Kach lecha gilayon gadol. Take a big gilayon. Gilayon, either, you know, the way we normally understand it, a sheet of parchment, big sheet of parchment. It could also be a great deal of their writing was done on a wooden or a clay tablet. Excellent. Uchtov alav becheret enosh. Write onto that tablet. Becheret enosh. Cheret is something that you engrave with, which of course leaves the impression that it is a tablet and it's not a sheet of parchment. Becheret enosh. When he says human engraving, what he means is the kind of engraving that a human being can read easily. I imagine Gilayon Gadol, what he's telling him is, you know, make a big sign, a poster. Make a poster. You know, and you'll stand at the end of Ramban. The women are out every morning, you don't see it, huh? They're out over there with their big signs. Make a big sign, that's what he tells him. And you know what you're supposed to write on the sign? L'maher shalal chosh buzz. I think I mentioned that last week. This is also going to be the name of one of the children of Yeshayahu, and I suggest that don't try and give that name to any of your children. L'maher shalal chosh buzz. L'maher shalal means that spoil should be hurried, and buzz also means that which is taken in war. Chosh means quick. Maher and chosh are synonyms. Shalal and buzz are synonyms. L'maher shalal chosh, l'maher shalal chosh buzz. Which of course means that the day of looting will come quickly, or should come quickly. What does it refer to? Many of the forces say that it refers to the ascending power of Ashur. The ascending power of Ashur is the day that it loots Eretz Yisrael is going to come quickly. Now it seems that Yeshayahu is supposed to write a document. He writes it on this big luach. V'o'idoli edim ne'emonim, and I sign down as witnesses. Witnesses who are edim ne'emanim, trustworthy witnesses, et Uriah HaKohen ve'et Zechariah Yahu ben Yiverech Yahu. Uriah HaKohen and Zechariah ben Yiverech Yahu. Now here there's a very, very big difference between Pshuto Shel Mikra and what Chazal have to say. This is an extremely famous pasuk, and I'm going to show you right away. You wanted to know if I have a handout? I have a handout, and it's on this pasuk. I wouldn't leave you without. This is still Yeshayahu talking to Ahab. He's still not in school, take one and pass the rest. It's coming around. Let's see how quickly they can do it over there. All right. Might get you nervous. Now this, I want to learn with you a famous Gemara. You may get a special benefit from this famous Gemara. The benefit may be, the custom has become now when a boy gets bar mitzvah, he either finishes a seder of Mishnayos, he makes a siman a seder Mishnayos, or he finishes a mesechta. And the mesechtas that are chosen, if it's around Purim time, then his father will have been banging the Masechta Megillah into his head for 5 years, until the kid is able to read the end of the Masechta and makes a siyum. No, but thank God our children, they're pretty good. One of the Masechtas, I've been at a number of bar mitzvahs where the bar mitzvah boy finishes Masechet Makot. First of all, it's a beautiful Masechta. Second, it's 24 blot, which becomes something reasonable. I have not yet seen a bar mitzvah boy who finishes Masechta Bava Batra that has 177 folios. I don't know. I think they say somebody, I think 170, yeah, Kufayin Zayin. If they say about one of the Gedolei Yisrael that before davening on Shabbos he'd have a kezala, that's a cheese. What's the kezala that he had? He went from Gans Masechta Bava Batra before he went to Shul Kuf Ayin Zayin Daf. All right, That these stories for me are always frustrating when I hear these stories about Gedolei Yisrael, you know, just able to run through Shas backwards and forwards, you know, in their spare time. They're frustrating. So I don't like those stories. But one of the Masechtas that young men usually finish is the Masechta Makot, and they learn the famous Gemara Masechta Makot, which is based on this pasuk here in Yeshayahu. But I just want to do another pasuk or two. One more pasuk, yeah. And then we'll be able to get back to this Gemara. Where Kravel HaNeviyah. Yeshayahu says, I came to the Neviyah. I had marital relations with the Neviyah. An unusual term, by the way. Quite unusual. Because while it's acceptable to call the wife of a rabbi a rebbetzin, it's not usual to call the wife of a prophet a Neviyah. Because she's not necessarily a Neviyah. This is about one of the few places where this term is used. Anyway, Vatahash, she became pregnant, Vatelet Ben, she gave birth to a son. Vayomer Hashem Eli, and God said to me, Kroshmo, call his name, Maher Shalal Chash Baz. Which means that at this point we should know that Yeshayahu has three children. One of them we didn't learn about yet, but we mentioned him. One is Shaar Yashuv. The other is Immanuel. And now he also has Maher Shalal Chashbaz. Why is he to be called that? Ki b'terem yeda hanar kero avi v'imi. Because before the child knows to call father or mother, Yisad Chel Damesek v'Shalal Shomron lifnei Melech Ashur. Here the prophecy really comes to an end. Because the whole prophecy began at the beginning of chapter 7, where Yeshayahu goes out into the field outside of Yerushalayim, near where people wash their clothing, Mesilat Shdei Koves, and he comes to Achaz, king of Yehuda. Achaz, king of Yehuda, knows that Aram, Ritzin, Melech Aram, and Pekah ben Remaliah, Melech Yisrael, are coming toward him. And he is frightened. He is terrified before these two kings who have joined together. By the way, what's not mentioned over here, but is mentioned in Divrei Hayamim, and in, partially in Malachim, is that Achaz attempted to get Ashur, whom he saw already as a rising power, as an ally, in order that Ashur should take the heat off of him and go to war with Ritzin and Aram. The important thing that the Navi wants to tell him is these two. What did the Navi call them? You've got to remember that. This you have to like. Shnei Zanvos Ha'udim Ha'ashenim Ha'ele. These two smoking tails of firebrands. And as we said, this is where there's smoke and there's no fire. It's not always true where there's smoke, there's fire. These are smoking brands that leave the impression as though they have power and they are strength. They're nothing. So he says, before this child, Maher Shalal Chashbaz, before he can even say Abba or Ima, how long could that be?
A year.
I don't think it's more than a year. By the time, I mean, if a kid can't say Abba, I mean, I always try at 6 months that they should say Saba, and I fail miserably. I fail miserably. I'm still working on 1 2-year-old that's coming to my house, you know, to see if he'll say Saba. I don't know. I think they just don't like me. Anyway, ki b'teden yeda hanar, before this child is going to know to call father and mother. Now you have to know how to read the rest of the pasuk. The army of Damascus, the host, the wealth of Damascus, and all of the spoil of Shomron will be carried away. All the strength and all the might of Aram, which is Damascus, the capital of Aram is Damascus, and Shomron, which is the capital of Yisrael, it will all be gone. And who's the one that's going to do it? It will be Lifnei Melech Ashur, before the king of Ashur. So therefore, really what's happening here at the beginning of the chapter is Hashem tells Yeshayahu, write out these words, Maher, Shalal, Kosh, Baz. What it really means is, and there are two signs. Number one, the poster that he writes, and he has two witnesses sign it down on the bottom, so you should know, don't open until Ashur destroys Damascus and Shomron, and then you will know that the Rabbeinu Shalom prophesied precisely what was going to happen. He's telling Ochoz, the two whom you are frightened of are going to be carried off. They're going to fall. They're going to crumble. Aram is over. Finished. They will be carried away before the king of Ashur. And as we also pointed out, Ritzin Melech Aram is the last of the kings of Aram. For hundreds of years, Aram caused a great deal of pain to Klal Yisrael. And he's finished. Pekar, Ma inyan Uriah etzel Zechariah. What's Uriah doing by Zechariah? Uriah was b'migdash Rishon, he was by the first Bet HaMikdash. Zechariah b'migdash Sheni, and Zechariah is the second Bet HaMikdash. Ella, you know what Yeshayahu is saying over here? Tolo hakatuv nevuato shel Zechariah b'nevuato shel Uriah. The prophecy of Zechariah is dependent, is interrelated to the prophecy of Uriah. The prophecy of Uriah was the destruction of Yerushalayim and the destruction of the Bet HaMikdash. K'tiv, it says, it's really a pasuk in Micha that they attribute to Uriah. Lachem, therefore, biglalchem, because of you, Tzion sodeh teichoresh. Tzion is going to be plowed under like a field. And b'Zechariah k'tiv, you know what it says in Zechariah, the famous pasuk, Od yeshvu zekeinim uzekeinot v'rechovot Yerushalayim. Elderly men and women are going to sit in the streets of Yerushalayim. Yeladim v'yeladot, children, boys and girls are going to play in the streets of Yerushalayim. Zechariah describes a Yerushalayim rebuilt. Uriah describes a Yerushalayim destroyed. One prophecy is dependent upon the other, which means the following. Rabbi Akiva continues on and he says, Ad shalonit kaima nevuato shel Uriah. As long as the prophecy of Uriah had not been fulfilled, hayiti mityarei, I was afraid, shalotit kayen nevuato shel Zechariah, I was afraid that the prophecy of Zechariah would not be fulfilled. But ashav now shenit kaima nevuato shel Uriah, now that I see that the prophecy of Uriah, the absolute destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, has taken place, and precisely as the Navi said, Shu'olim Hilchuba, there are foxes walking through the Harabayit. When I see that the prophecy of destruction has been fulfilled with such exactness, now I am certain, I have perfect faith that the prophecy of consolation and reconstruction is going to be fulfilled precisely. Now that the prophecy of Uriah has been fulfilled, biyadua, for certain, certainly the prophecy of Zechariah will be fulfilled. This is what the rabbis said to Rabbi Akiva. Akiva nichamtanu. Akiva, you have consoled us. Akiva, you have consoled us. Should we try? Let's try a little bit of the Marsha. Okay. The first piece over here is when it says that they tore their garments. So the Marsha brings, Mefarshim brings, Rabbeinu Gershon brings, that yes, that's the din. You're supposed to tear kriya when you see the Harabayit. I will say for another time, there's a great deal written in Halacha about about kriya bizman hazeh. What do you tear and what don't you tear? But there still is, according to most of them, unfortunately, there's a halacha of kriya. Certainly over har habayit, And if there wasn't before, there certainly should be now. And there certainly should be now. Okay. So therefore they tore their garments. Now, what the Rishonim are pointing out is that here it just happens to be part of the story of how they conducted themselves. So you should know they conducted themselves al pi halacha. You see the living halacha that they tore their garments. The next piece, Kivan Shi'igiyu L'Harabayit, you know, so the dark letters are the text. And then after that begins Mahar Shah. Yesh L'Dagdeik Shaharei HaNovi Hoya Mitztar Al Zeh Shenema Al Zeh Hoya Dovo Libeinu Al Har Tzion Sheshomein Shu'olim Hilchubo. Now the Novi, when he says about this, my heart is faint and sick, about Har Tzion that is desolate and foxes walk through it, this was a source of great pain to the Navi. Uma inyan bet hanevuot shel Udiyah v'Zachariah zeh l'zeh, what relates these two prophecies, the prophecy of Udiyah and the prophecy of Zechariah, one to another? Tahar b'nevi'im nivu zeh v'puranut v'zeh v'nechamot Yerushalayim. There are many prophets, and there were those who talked about the punishment of Yerushalayim, those who talked about the consolation of Yerushalayim. So now, what the Rashi is asking, it seems that Rabbi Akiva has turned the prophecy of Shu'olim Hilchuba into something to be happy about, you know? Yippee! Hooray! Shu'olim Hilchuba, I see it for myself. So he says, there's no question about it that Rabbi Akiva also was in great pain when he saw the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and that the Shechina was not there. Proof, of course, is he also tore his garments. He also tore Kriya with them when he arrived at Har HaTzofim. The prophet who is in pain because of Shu'olim Hilchuba, Hainu al Atzmut HaKurban, Virauto Shu'olim Hilchuba, Shenestalka Shchina Misham Shamigdash Chadei, Kamosha Kosov B'Tchilas HaMikra. In other words, the Navi is full of pain because of the fact that there is destruction, the removal of Shchina, as it says at the beginning of the pasuk, Al Har Tzion Sheshomein, Har Tzion is desolate. Ach mimash shehem natnu siva v'tam al itzdaram v'yomnu makum shakosu bo v'azor akorev yumas v'ach sheshu'olim hilchu bo v'vizulat atzmut ha'churban shenestar karshuinim isham hayu mitzdarin al shahamokam chorev me'en yoshev. The rabbis are in pain about something else, the place, because they quoted the pasuk in Torah that says the place where Hazor HaKorev, anybody who's not a Kohen Gadol comes there, shall be put to death. What it means is the Makom Mikudish Kol Kach, a place that is so holy, Shahazor HaKorev would have a death penalty upon him. Now they see such a lowly animal as a shuol, a fox. The mashma from the Gemara, it seems their pain, how you would start him al ashiflus hagadolos in ishtamish bo shuol vilu how you ishtamish bo ben adam lo how you would start him kol kach. Now they seem to leave the impression that what upsets them is a lowly fax is walking out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which would mean what happens if a human being would have walked out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim? They wouldn't have been so terribly upset. Al zeh amar, that's why Rabbi Akiva said, l'kach ani misachek, therefore I laugh. Shehu chorev, that it is destroyed. Now listen very carefully over here. V'hashu olim hilchu bo v'lo ha'akum. You know what makes me happy? That you know who's walking around on the Harabayit? Foxes. As long as it's not in the hands of the Gaya. As long as it's not in their hands, and they have no nachat ruach from Har Habayit, v'hashu olim hilchu bo v'lo ha'akum she'ilem nachat ruach mimenu yizbarach b'makom ha'mekudesh kazel hityashev sham. They're not able. They're not settled. they're not settled there. Over what happens if there would be Akuman Harabayed? Or would Rabbi Akiva be upset? And what happened? What do you think? I can only imagine or let you guess what would Rabbi Akiva say if an Israeli government is ready to give up Harabayed so that Shu'olim and Bnei Adam should be Hilchubar. Rabbi Akiva would have torn all of his garments. So watch what he says. What he's really referring us to is the following. Oh, we once, this was in a different shiur years ago. In the Tochacha, in Parashat Bechukotai, it says, sing a moment, just be silent for a moment as we begin to remember the pasuk. I think it's pasuk 42 in the next to last perek in okay, go ahead. Hashimoti ani et haaretz v'shamimu aleha oyeveichem hayoshvim ba. Did I make it up? Hang in. Okay, the pasuk is not 42. It's a few psukim earlier. It's 40. Is it 40? Maybe it was 32. 32. Okay, not bad. After all the things that I forgot this morning, my wife and I, everything that we forgot at home, I needed something that would give me back my self-confidence. Pasuk 32 in chapter 26 in Vayikra, Vahashimoti ani et haaretz, I will make the land desolate. V'shamamu oleha oyeveichem hayoshvimpa, your enemies who live in the land will be desolate. Rashi and the Ramban in the footsteps of the Sifri say that here in the middle of the Tochacha, there's good news. In other words, the Tochacha is, the Rav Hashem says, I have bad news and I have good news. The bad news is the Tochacha, but the good news is right in the middle of the Tochacha, I will make the land desolate, the Shamamu Aleha Ayyavechem Hayoshimbo. Your enemies who will try to settle the land will be desolate. And Rashi says, this is good news. This is good news. The good news is that the enemy will never truly be able to settle and enjoy the land. And the Ramban describes that there's no place on the face of this earth that was as fruitful and as luscious as Eretz Yisrael, and now has become so desolate and so dry. Because where the Kedusha is greater, the Churban is greater. And the good news is that no people will ever be able to come and settle. And that's one of the Rashi's that always gets me going, Rashi and the Ramban, how I always wondered whether Rashi had sleepless nights after that. There he goes ahead and he writes that no people will be able to settle in, so wasn't he concerned, you know, maybe 100 or 200 years down the line, the Japanese would come and then colonize Eretz Yisrael, and boy, would they do a job over here. There'd be videos and, there must be new stuff today, there's more advanced stuff than videos growing out of the ground over here. How did he know that no people would be able to settle there? So Rashi, I tell you, slept well. He had absolutely no problems. If the Rebbeinu says, v'shamamu aleha yaveichem, your enemies are going to be desolate, you can be absolutely certain that nobody is going to ever have any nachas ruach in this country. From Byzantine to Greek to Crusader to Palestinian. So only Shtubin kanachas here in this land. As I state a pasuk, as far as I'm concerned, a pasuk in Torah is more important than anything else. Here lies the truth. Rabbi Akiva, according to the Marsha, and the Marsha really brings another source for this. The Marsha says, "Ukedamrin on Gofritz v'melach sreifo kol arzo." The entire earth, it was as though it had been destroyed with salt. And he says, Kutian the Goyim, how many years the Kutian that were brought to Eretz Yisrael, how many years did they plant and plow? And they never really succeeded. V'lohaya Oset Pedas, the Gemara says, the Kutim are the ones, by the way, who were brought by Samcheref to take the place. In other words, in the old days at least they knew how to do that. If there are Jewish refugees who are taken all the way out beyond the Tigris and the Euphrates, so you take other refugees and you bring them here, you just settle refugees in all sorts of places. Alright? So what happened is the Kutim came here, but they never really made it. They just didn't make it. As much effort as they would put into the land simply did not respond. Because Torah says that the land is only going to respond to Yiddish ahent that are going to work the land. So the Marsha says, V'zeu shoma b'uriya maktiv b'glalchem tzion sodet choresh v'tzon olam eshiye tzion chorey v'sodet te choresh v'tzon olam rak sodet nevel o sodet zera shelo yel shum bal chayim bo nachat ruach. Uriah was saying that Zion is going to be plowed under like a field, but it's only going to be plowed. It's not going to be planted, nothing is going to grow. The only one who will be able to inhabit it are going to be the animals. V'amar Rabbi Akiva, Arkshav Shanido and Nevuato Shel Uriah Kayemet Sheshualim Hilchuba Ve'in Bo Yishuvo Dinkav. Explains this is what. Did you bring the tapes? You brought the tapes. Alright? Do you hear what Rabbi Masha is saying, Rabbi Akiva? The source of joy to Rabbi Akiva is that there are shu'olim there, but not men. And if that's the fulfillment of the prophecy of Uriah, then good things are going to happen. I see now that the prophecy of Uriah has been fulfilled, that foxes are going through, there is no settlement of Ovdei Kechavim. But he goes one step further, the Marsha says. Why is the Shu'al leaving the Beit Kodesh HaKadoshim? Why do they see the Shu'al going in? I would imagine what the Masha wants to know. They see the Shu'al going out. They don't see the Shu'al going in and staying there. Because the symbolism of the Shu'al going out is that even the Shu'al doesn't find anything. There's nothing for him there. I don't know what goes on the Harabayat. I imagine where the rock is, so there's a dome over the rock. I don't know whether anybody, I don't know, I don't know what's going on over there. One of these days we're going to have to find out. Therefore I laugh. This land was good and praiseworthy. You know when the land was really good? You know when the land really gave out all of its produce, when Jews were living there? Va'ata bi'eretz ro'a, now it's a bad land. Shein l'shum b'alchai nachat ru'ava. No living being, even the shu'al doesn't have any nachas. V'chol zeh edut l'nevuato shel Zechariah. This is all proof that the prophecy of Zechariah is going to be fulfilled. Shelo yiyu Yerushalayim miyushav. Ve'en l'shum b'alchai, no living being, nachat ru'ava bimenu yudbarach barashimo. I would imagine that in today's atmosphere they would say that the Marsha is making a political statement, and you can't mix politics and religion. He says that the ultimate proof, what Rabbi Akiva sees is, and I believe this to be absolutely true, the only ones that will ever have nachat ruach and ultimately shalom v'shalva hashkei bevetach in this land is the Jewish people. No other people will ever be able to settle the land. No other people will ever be able to find a sense of security in this land. This was clearly the prophecy of Zechariah. Zechariah describes the the beauty of Yerushalayim and the pulsating life of Yerushalayim is when Jews, Zakenim, Uzakenot, Yeladim, Vyeladot, are living and playing in the streets of Yerushalayim. No other people will ever be able to make it. They may be here for a shorter period of time, a longer period of time, but in the final view of things, it simply will not happen. And therefore, what he saw was even the Shu'al, this is what's amazing, this is the beauty of the Marsha, even the Shu'al has nothing to do in the Beit Kodshei HaKadoshim. He has nothing to do over there, and therefore he goes running out of the Beit Kodshei HaKadoshim. So that's quite a different way of taking a look at the Pasuk, that here it's amazing. Pshuto shel Mikra, as the Mefarshim say, is there was another Uriah and another Zechariah, and Yeshayahu had them sign on his poster that said Maher Shalom Chashbaz. Along come Chazal and they take a look at this pasuk and they see two epics in Jewish history, two periods, two Nevi'im. And in one breath they see Churban and Geula, destruction and redemption. Uriah represents destruction, and the precision of the destruction bears most eloquent proof that the redemption is going to be precisely as it was said by the Nevi. Okay, so you see, I gave you a handout today. Okay.